Let's cross to our US correspondent, Kelsey Snell. Kelsey's congressional correspondent for NPR based in Washington, D.C. Hi, Kelsey. Thanks for your time.
Thanks for having me.
I'm going to just invert the subjects, if you don't mind, a little bit, because there's been a lot of coverage here, and I watched it live myself, actually, watching a live broadcast of the stand-up or the media conference done with the Japanese Prime Minister yesterday about President Biden's comments or his response to a very direct question, would China to make a move on Taiwan? Would the US get involved militarily? And he responded very directly, yes. How has that bluntness been received by commentators in the US?
It has been a bit of a surprise. I mean, Biden said yes, and then he said that's the commitment we made. Now, that is a bit of a surprise to some people, who, including those that are in his own administration, because, you know, it's a big departure from where the U.S. has been in the past. You know, the U.S. has taken a fairly hands-off approach to this. The U.S. signed on to the One China policy, which essentially acknowledges China's position that Taiwan is part of China, but it has never, the U.S. has never officially recognized Beijing's claim to Taiwan. So these comments from Biden have kind of created a stir in the foreign policy community. And the White House is saying that the U.S. official position remains unchanged, though this is not the first time we've seen this happen, where Biden has made comments like this, only to have the administration say that he's either speaking from the heart or that, you know, it is an expression of his personal beliefs. And then they go on to say that the White House position is unchanged. That does create some confusion. And that's a particular problem in this moment when he is speaking right there at China's doorstep.
It was his references with Putin and words to the effect of, for God's sake, he can't stay in power. I recall that after the invasion of Ukraine. And again, there was the risk that some might interpret that as a call for regime change. And you know, the White House walked that back very, very quickly.
Yes.
With this one, it is an interesting one, though, because it's a direct positioning with respect to a real possibility vis-a-vis Taiwan. Some might welcome the clarity. However, is it being perceived as a moment of clarity, or again, as you say, a moment of speaking, perhaps, without full consideration of the ramifications, like just honestly answering a question and perhaps not thinking a step ahead as to how it might be received? What are people making of why he answered that way?
Well, it's so very hard to tell because the White House has given very little additional information. The response has been quite simple, just basically saying, repeating over and over to the questions, that the White House position remains unchanged.
What is the White House position, though, with respect to that question?
Yeah, the White House position being the signing on to the One China policy. And so there is no White House official position of providing that kind of military support to Taiwan. So it is very confusing in this moment. And again, the only clarity that they are offering is that the president's comments, they don't even say that the president's comments don't reflect a change or don't reflect the White House policy. They're just saying the White House policy isn't changed. So, yes, it leaves many questions to be answered.
I'm sure those questions will be pursued. The meeting that's happening there and this reaching out to the Asia-Pacific region in the way that he is doing here, does it reflect a genuinely new push to revive relations that some would argue have been left, not to atrophy, but have been left perhaps unattended, and at a time where China's rise has been consistent and deliberate, rise in influence? This is not to set one against the other, but has it been seen that perhaps the US has been a bit AWOL in a diplomatic sense for some time?
That is, you know, the Biden administration started out when they came into office at the beginning of 2021 saying that they were going to be pivoting to Asia with a great focus on making these relationships stronger. But much of that has been kind of put to the side with a lot of domestic issues that Biden has been dealing with and with the war in Ukraine. So, yes, I think that the White House acknowledges that this is not the way that they intended to spend the past several years and that they want to refocus their attention. Though, I mean, it is very clear that the U.S. is still very, very focused on Ukraine and the conflict with Russia. That is absorbing huge amounts of both time and, you know, fiscal energy. There's a lot of money coming from the U.S. To invest in the conflict in Ukraine. So I think that this is being received in the U.S. as an opportunity for Biden to kind of reassert his original intention in the foreign policy sphere, though the moments like we were just discussing make it more complicated for his ability to kind of really drive that home off, you know, outside of the U.S. and to the audience in, to which it's intended.
Speaking of Ukraine, has that $40 billion now been released? I think it was Rand Paul who was holding up its release.
Yes.
And has it now been released to Ukraine?
Yes, Biden signed the $40 billion in additional aid while he was on his way to Asia. Now, that money will be kind of spent over time. It's a combination of humanitarian aid, food aid, and then the military aid that we've been seeing over the past several months, where the U.S. is sending weaponry and some training capacity. I will say that the thing that seems to be going out the door first, the money being spent most rapidly, has to do with money being sent for food aid for many of the countries surrounding Ukraine that are absorbing refugees, and to try to shore up some of the exports of food that Ukraine is usually responsible for. One thing that Congress was quite focused on was a concern that the Ukraine provides a lot of like grain and other major forms of sustenance, not just
staples
in Europe, but particularly in third world countries and in parts of Africa. So there was some concern that there could be a global food crisis if this money did not get spent rather quickly.
Of course, presidents have been trying to focus on their own domestic issues in recent times, and just this new president anyway being called into international situations probably more than he had intended when he started out. What is dominating domestically at the moment? The cost of living, we know, is always there. But there's also very specifically this ongoing baby formula shortage.
That's right. And so the baby formula shortage began when a plant shut down in Michigan after a voluntary recall, after babies were sickened and two babies died. The company Abbott shut down the plant voluntarily and has been unable to reopen over several months. That caused a major disruption to the supply chain, not just for the types of formula that were being manufactured at that plant in Michigan, but throughout the entire supply chain as people shifted their demand. There is a kind of monopoly on the manufacturing of baby formula in the United States that is in part fed by a system for the Women and Infant Children Welfare Program, where they have contracts with individual companies to buy large quantities of formula. It's created a market that could be easily destabilized, and that's what we've seen right now. So the administration invoked a kind of rarely used Wartime Defense Production Act that requires manufacturers in the supply chain, so not just the people making the formula directly, but those companies that make the canisters or the component parts of formula, that they prioritize making those components for the formula manufacturers before any other orders that may come into their company. That's supposed to speed up the supply chain. They also have loosened restrictions on the import of foreign-made formulas that typically have not met the FDA standards but have been vetted in their home countries. We're seeing images today of airplanes being stocked full to the brim, these military airplanes full of formula being flown in from Europe. We saw planes landing in Indiana today and tomorrow in Pennsylvania with the hope of speeding some more supply to shelves as the domestic supply tries to keep back up and kind of refill the old supply chain and get back to the normal production levels.
Just a couple of minutes left to discuss this truly awful shooting, the Buffalo shooting. We saw a lot of coverage of it here last week. And again, the fallout continues from this year.
Yes. And, you know, the really striking thing, I think, for a lot of people watching this is that typically Democrats, President Biden's own party, have tried to pass gun control legislation following moments of mass gun crime, and horrible situations like we saw in Buffalo, and candidly another situation that unfolded over the weekend in California. But that has not been the case. Democrats instead tried to pass an anti-domestic terrorism bill that does not appear headed for passage in the Senate, and that lacks some support within the Biden administration itself. You know, there is a divide among Democrats on gun control, and it's something that they have been consistently unable to address. And it's something that is very, very frustrating and jarring for their own supporters, because a majority of Democratic voters support further gun control, but the party does not have a sufficient majority in Congress in order to get that legislation passed. And it's yet another tension between the voters for that party and the lawmakers that represent them.
Thank you very much. It's always appreciated. Kelsey Snell is congressional correspondent for NPR based in Washington, D.C.